Hi, and welcome to Emetophobia Help. I'm Anna Christie, recovered emetophobic and licensed psychotherapist specializing in emetophobia. These podcasts have a trigger warning of words associated with emetophobia. If you enjoy these podcasts or you find them helpful, you can buy me a coffee. Just scroll down in the notes, click on the link, and for a couple of bucks, you can support the podcast. So season four, here we go. Hi, everyone. I'm here today with Annie, who is from Victoria, Australia, and she lives sort of southwest of Melbourne. For those of you who know something about Australia, I'm thrilled to have someone from Australia to talk to today. So welcome.
Thank you. And I hope that you can hear me all good. I know we've had some little bit of difficulty this morning, but yeah, super excited to have a chat with you. And for anyone listening, if you know Geelong area, that's where I am from. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I feel like I'm pretty worldly just knowing, you know, that, like where Melbourne is, Sydney and Perth.
Yeah.
And the names of your are they states in Australia or provinces? Yes,
because states,
we in Canada often say the name of our province too, the way you do. And then Americans don't know what we're talking about because they just sort of say the city, like they'll say you're from Vancouver, Canada, which or Toronto, Canada, but whereas we would say Vancouver, British Columbia. So anyway, so interesting.
Yeah, I was trying to find the time difference between us on my clock on my phone, and I could not find where it was that I was searching for. I had no idea what to type in, but we got there in the end.
Well, I was setting up some of my classes in January, and I wanted to be able to offer them to people in down under, you know, anywhere, actually. And so I had the same problem, and I was trying to ask Alexa. Oh, I shouldn't say her whole name or she'll start.
Yes.
But you know what I'm saying.
I know.
Trying to ask her, like, if it's here that anyway. And so then I just waited till I'm like, okay, let me try the late afternoon. So when it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then I asked, what time is it in Sydney? Anyway, it's just, I know you have more than one time zone as well. So, and I'm like, oh, okay, that works. That's 9 o'clock in the morning. So anyway, but I didn't really think about you're already on daylight savings time because it's spring there. And we don't change over off of, we're still on it and we don't change off of it till November. So that messes me up with people in the UK and whatnot.
We've lived in Western Australia, so Perth, since I was six. And they, I think after about 2 years of living there, they stopped daylight savings. So now that I've just moved here 10 months ago and we have daylight savings again, I'm so out of whack with it. I'm waking up an hour late, an hour early. I don't know what's going on. So it'll just take some adjusting.
Yeah, it's really, I know we're not talking about emetophobia, and I'm sorry to all the people fast forwarding this chatter, but honestly, they've done studies, and it's not a good thing. Like, you shouldn't be changing off of standard time. Like, a lot of people say, I'd like to keep it at daylight savings, but that's not supposed to be so good for your rhythms.
I can understand
whatever.
That.
So it's, the people in Perth, Australia, they know what they're doing. Yeah.
I know. Okay, I should go back.
So, tell us all about your emetophobia and when it started and all of that.
Yeah. So, I have listened to the podcast quite a lot, your podcast, and it's very interesting how everyone tends to have a childhood story and it kind of, you know, goes through their whole life. Mine, it's hard to pinpoint when it started. Trigger warning, is it okay to talk about sexual assault?
Yes, I'll put that trigger warning in. Absolutely.
Okay. So when I was seven or eight, I was at my at school. I had a primary school friend and she lived on my street and I would go to her house and play a lot, and her dad sexually assaulted me. From kind of that point, it was very muscle memory, I would say. I had to, you know, run to get out of there. Sorry, I just take a couple of breaths.
Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, you know, and I'm thank you for being brave enough to share it with us, even though I'm it's obviously difficult. I just don't know what else to say other than,
I know,
you know, I'm so sorry. And if anyone's listening that has been through any sort of sexual assault, no matter what kind it was, it does have long lasting or it definitely can, ramifications in your life, and don't feel like you're weird or stupid or anything for having, you know, continued sort of triggers around it and things that affect you in your life.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's so strange when talking about it, you know, because I don't have the, I don't meet the classification for PTSD. So I'm very, very lucky in the sense that I don't tend to have flashbacks. I think that is partially, though, the fact that I actually don't remember anything after the act. So I don't know if that's a combination of being 8 years old, being probably very, very scared or in shock at the adrenaline. But yes, the father said, let's play hide and seek, and took me to his room and locked the door. And then, you know, what went down happened. Oh, so I remember sort of a feeling of this wave of heat being like, I have got to get out of here. Like, I've just got to go. And for 8 years old, you know, it's amazing that such a young person, young body knows that that's a threat when there's not been much exposure in their life to things as sexual abuse. Right. So I said, my dinner's ready. I think it was about 2 p.m. So I'm not sure why I said that.
Right.
But it got me out of there. He was just like, go. So I remember just running home, and since then, skipping lots of the story, but flash forward to now, my response to feeling very nervous, feeling panic attacks, anxiety, is just to run and to get out of wherever I am. And so how we think the emetophobia started and why I have that response to just running is when I was still living in England. So I think I was about 3 or 4. My mum took me to any UKers out there. She took me to Sainsbury's. If anyone knows what that is, it's a grocery store. And I said, I don't want to go. I don't feel well. And she was like, no, just come on. You'll be fine. And I was in the trolley. And you know how they sort of strap children in the little trolley basket?
Yeah.
And I spewed everywhere, all down myself, in the aisle, everything. And my mum said she's never quite seen a child react like how I just screamed bloody murder, basically. And I was like saying, get me out, get me out. And so I'm not sure if somewhere in my brain has remembered that trapped feeling with vomit and then in the wardrobe to being like, you know what I mean? Kind of tied the two together. So I guess that's kind of how it all started. But so after the sexual abuse, yes, the police were called and Department of Child Protection was called. We'd only lived in Australia for, I think it was a year. So bless my parents. They just really had like no idea what to do, who to call. You know, it was all so unfamiliar to them. But yes, they called those services and I believe there were investigations done with me. Again, I don't remember any of this. Like for years, I thought nothing ever happened, that my parents did nothing about it because I just didn't remember. And anyway, they ended up ruling it that it was a cultural difference because this family was of a different culture and they did nothing about it.
What culture? Don't answer the question. It's rhetorical. But what the hell culture? Is it okay to take the neighbor's child into a room, lock the door, and assault them? I don't think that's terrible.
I know.
I'm sorry that happened as well. But
that's okay.
I mean, good good for your parents for reporting it. At least you would feel safe with them, even if you didn't remember it. And, you know, good for you for saying something. A lot of children cannot, because they're so ashamed and they don't understand what happened. And they so they don't say anything, or the perpetrator tells them not to say anything. And they abide by that because they're children. So, well, we don't know. I'm sure if you've listened to a number of my podcasts, you know, we don't know what causes emetophobia, but we know several things that contribute to it. So any kind of trauma like that, where you would feel afraid and vulnerable and whatnot, and then, tie it to the shopping, we call them shopping carts here, trolley, like that's another incident. So, and some of it will be genetic predisposition to anxiety from who knows who, but it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, you just throw all of that into a pot and stir it up and you get emetophobia. So when did you... When's the first time you really thought about, I'm afraid of vomiting or seeing someone vomit?
Yeah, so it sort of went in waves. So after the assault, I don't remember any kind of physical sensations, which I now obviously know are panic attacks. I don't remember any of that. But I think once I was about maybe 11 or 12, so 4 years later, I remember every single night before bed, I thought, I'm sick. I'm going to be sick. Something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And my dad would come in and he'd say, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? And they probably had, well, I know they had no idea what was happening to me either. And it was to the point where I was getting myself so worked up that I would be gagging and dry heaving, but nothing would ever happen. And for a year, my whole family just thought, like, oh my goodness, she is actually just unwell. There's something wrong with her. But yeah, nothing ever happened. Nothing came of that. And then just dissipated. And again, nothing happened. No signs that I can remember anyway of anxiety until I was, I think, 16. I was in high school. So I'm not sure how the years work in America, but high school, year 11, I don't know what that translates to.
Yes, it's grade 11 in Canada. They have names in America. Listen to the two of us sound like we don't know what we're talking about. They have names like it's probably junior in high school, I think. You know what I mean?
They junior have like
sophomore. That sounds really cool. I have no idea what year that is. But don't send me emails. I can look it up. It's okay.
Okay. Anyway, no worries.
Year 11.
Grade 11. And I was actually booked to go on a cultural tour with my school to Japan, which was awesome. I had hosted a Japanese student in my home, and it was a cultural exchange experience. And I absolutely loved it. And I was so excited to go on this tour. And about 2 weeks prior, all of a sudden, it just hit me like a ton of bricks, almost like I had literally walked into a wall of just pure anxiety and panic. And very, very quickly, my life changed, I suppose, because I went from, you know, being in high school, going on this international touring experience, out with my friends all the time. And then I was completely stuck inside my bedroom. I refused to leave. I didn't go out anywhere. They ended up kicking me off the school tour. It said I was a liability, which was very nice. And so from I'm not sure if it was, you know, being away from my parents, perhaps, or if it was being away from home and my parents, because I've been away from home on international trips during that time, but always with my parents, because I was obviously quite young still. So, but yes, regardless of that, that's kind of when the first wave happened, I suppose. And they were all the very classic symptoms of anxiety and emetophobia. So I went in to see a psychologist. She was just an angel during that time, guided me through everything, introduced me to what is anxiety, what is a panic attack, you know, because these things aren't really spoken about in Australia much anyway. So I had no idea. And then I got introduced to a psychiatrist because the psychologist felt that we needed medication. There wasn't much else that talk therapy could do at that point. Mm-hmm. And the psychiatrist put me on five or six different medications in the space of 2 months.
Just a little break halfway through to let you know about resources that you can find. First of all, I teach a set of 10 classes for people with emetophobia, and you can find information about those on my website at emetophobiahelp.org. I also have a Facebook group called Emetophobia No Panic, and you can look that up on Facebook. If you're listening as a therapist, there is a free website for you at emetophobia.net. It has all the resources you need for free to treat emetophobia. Dr. David Russ, child psychologist, and I recently published a book called Emetophobia, Understanding and Treating Fear of Vomiting in Children and Adults, and it's available at all online booksellers. And now back to our podcast. So, yeah, I'm really interested, actually, in you know, everything you've done to kind of try to get over this. But your psychiatrist put you on 5 or 6 medications within 2 months. I mean, they take about 3 months to work. Why did they keep changing all the time? Tell us more.
I really have no idea. And every psychologist that I've spoken to is absolutely just freaked out and stumped as to why that happened. Because, you know, knowing what I know now, one, like you said, they just wouldn't have shown any signs of positive impact during that short time.
Right.
It was, you know, just very premature to take me off a medication after 1 or 2 weeks. And also the damage that probably would have been done to my nervous system to,
hopefully not, you know. They're fairly harmless drugs, believe it or not. They seem like I'm assuming that they were SSRIs or something like that, you know.
Yeah, a few of them were antipsychotics. I'm not sure if they're classed as SSRIs as well, there was a few hardcore ones in there. Ultimately, I didn't stay on medication. Not that I don't believe in it or that I don't think it works. I have, you know, multiple people in my life and my support system that need medication to just about function. And I think it's a saving grace for them. Just for me, with that experience, it didn't work very well for me then.
So after that experience, have you done other things to try to work on recovering from emetophobia?
Yeah, so it kind of, there's still a little bit more. My therapist always tells me that I should write a book because of just how crazy the journey has been. But so after that experience, I just kept going with talk therapy. And I don't know if it was maybe some motivation from taking all the medications. I just had a very rough patch where I was sort of like, I was just really, really down, and I was just kind of taking a look at myself. Like, I don't want to live like this anymore. You know, I'm so young. My friends are out doing all of these things, which is not to say that, you know, people can just decide one day they want to be better. I honestly don't know what the flick of the switch was for me, but things just started getting better. And I just went out and I started doing more, and I just pushed myself to do a little bit here and a little bit there. And finally, everything was back to normal, in quotations. Okay. And then at 20, I was sexually assaulted again.
My goodness. So,
I laugh. It's not funny. It's just, you know, sometimes you tell your story that often that it becomes almost like a crazy journey, you know,
like they call it a comedy of errors, you know,
pretty much.
but it's, there's nothing comedic about it, but it's like it being kicked when you're down by the universe or something like that. So can you tell us a little? You don't have to talk about the sexual assault because we can well imagine it at age 20 especially, but how did that affect you and what happened there?
Yeah. And so with that time, it was a similar feeling of being trapped because I had been locked in a car. So again, I had that feeling of get me out of here. But that time I couldn't leave. And so that tends to be the running theme for me is, as like I said, as soon as I get any type of, I feel a bit nauseous or I, you know, my heart starts racing, it's like, there's danger here. I have to go. I have to get out of here. Like something's going to hurt me. And that thing ends up being vomit's going to hurt me, which is so, so wild to me because when you think about things like, I'm not worried about consciously, I'm not worried about sexual assault's going to hurt me or a person's going to hurt me. I'm worried about throwing up. Like yeah. The contrast between right. the two situations just seems mm-hmm. so far-fetched that I'd be focused on vomiting rather than focused on being assaulted again or something. So,
well, you know, it's all tied in together is the thing, you know, mm. and it's the same part of your brain saying, this is a very dangerous situation. Now vomiting isn't dangerous, but somehow it's gotten lumped in with, you know, other things and it might even be in a way protecting you from those other things, which yeah. is, you know, kind of, I always say that I think just one of my breakthroughs in therapy personally was discovering that my phobia, my terror was really covering up the deep sadness that I had for what had happened to yeah. me and the traumas that had happened to me in my life. And, you know, as an adult, I'd be like, I'd rather be sad, you know, have a good cry, get over it, whatever, than to have this horrible phobia, you know, yeah. thanks anyway, but you're not really helping me. And so it could be the same with you, you know, I mean, I don't know, but in a sense, it doesn't really matter because getting over it's the yeah. same no matter what. But it does, you know, for people listening who have had trauma, who've had any sort of trauma, actually, and have a metaphobia, you know, partly that phobia is trying to help you not think about your trauma.
You yeah. know?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been told that same thing by, I've had three therapists in my about 7 or 8 years, just for different stages of my life. And then I've thought I've recovered and then I've gone regressed again and gone back to yeah. therapy. But they've all said that same thing that, you know, phobias tend to be, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but they tend to just be an outlet for such chronic anxiety that your brain just tries to focus on one thing in particular rather than fear being around you all the time.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I probably have never worded it that way, but that would totally make sense. Yeah. When you're a child, especially, it feels as if fears around you all the time. When you're in a traumatic situation, it feels as though you're not safe, so therefore you're not safe at all.
Yeah.
You know, for any reason. And then the phobia, and you know, and then it sticks with, I mean, some kids, it becomes a fear of thunderstorms or a fear of dogs, or birds or whatever, clowns, but there are enough thunderstorms, birds, clowns, and dogs around that it's easy to kind of get over that and to outgrow yeah. it. But we can go for decades without vomiting. And yeah. every time we almost vomit and don't, actually that makes the phobia much worse.
Yeah.
Because it'd be better if you had vomited, you know, because then
I know.
At least then you'd go, oh, okay, that was not dangerous. But yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. yeah.
And so, I see quite a few, sorry to cut you off. I see quite a few posts on your Facebook page because I'm part of the page mm-hmm. Of, you know, people saying, does anybody else not burp? And I just wanted to add, I thought that was super right. interesting because me, my mum, my auntie and my cousins, we all can't burp and we right. all just simply don't vomit, which yes. you would think is very convenient when you have a fear of vomiting that you know you can't mm. burp and you don't vomit. But it's quite the opposite because it feels like this kind of looming cloud over you of, well, what if this time is different? You don't know right. if this time's going to be different, but it's just
yeah. Yeah.
working so hard to be, well, if it is different, then we'll deal with it.
Yes. And there's a name for that. And I always forget it, but I did write a blog about it. If you go to my website at emetophobiahelp.org and just go back through the blogs, there's a thing about not being able to burp. And a lot of the of people who have that condition are emetophobic, which is interesting. I don't know, we haven't done enough research. If you're a PhD student and you're listening and you want to do some research, I can tell you a million things that we could be researching.
My friend is doing a PhD, actually. Maybe I'll ask him to just change his whole thesis for the last 5 years very quickly.
I don't think he'll comply with that. But anyway, but there is treatment for it. I don't know if you or any of your family members are interested. There's actually some treatment, like where they put Botox in your throat. And then you are able to burp, and then you kind of learn to burp. And so when the Botox wears off, you can probably still burp. Because a lot of emetophobic people, when they have trapped gas in their stomach, become very afraid that they're going to vomit. But really, it's just gas. But easy for me to say just gas.
I know.
That's nothing, but if you're in the situation, it's more than nothing. Where are you at right now as far as your phobia goes? How's it going?
So right now I am in one of the lulls again, unfortunately, but that's okay because, you know, I don't think that anxiety is ever going to be something that I ultimately get rid of. And so for me, it's just so important to kind of go through these periods thinking like I'm going to learn so much on how to cope for the rest of my life when this happens to me. So as mentioned, I recently moved to Victoria. So that was at the very end of last November. And 2 days before we moved, we were driving over, which it's about we did it in 7 day drive, I think. And 2 days prior, my partner actually fell over and he broke his ankle in 3 places, had to have surgery. This was 60 hours before we were due to leave. So we got pushed back a couple of weeks and I did the whole drive by myself. He was a very good passenger princess. but that sort of kickstarted a stress. Obviously, it's very stressful moving, let alone 60 hours prior your partner's in surgery. Luckily he was fine though, so that's all good. But so I sort of didn't process the move when it happened, and then we got here and I'm away from my support system and we know nobody here, so there's not really that sense of community, and there's nothing that was, you know, not my friends inviting me out for coffee or for brunch or to go and see a movie anymore. And I just sort of regressed back into staying on the couch and watching a movie and sitting with my dog. And so we're in the process right now of going through all the exposures again and kind of relearning, I suppose, how to just get back into functioning. But I haven't actually done ladder therapy before, like exposure therapy. So I'd never mentioned, I know I mentioned I had 3 therapists. I hadn't actually mentioned to a therapist about any of the sexual abuse until my latest therapist, who I've been seeing for maybe 2 years now. And so I went to see her about something totally unrelated. And at the end I said, you know what, maybe I should just mention these things happened to me. I don't think it's that important. Why would that correlate into a fear of vomit? And she just sort of looked at me for a second like, okay, sure, let me just write that one down and I'll see you in the next session. But so yeah, I'd never had the option to do exposure therapy, and I truly think this time around is just so different. The way that I'm getting back into life is not kind of I just have to do these things and I've got to knuckle through and just get on with it. It's kind of I'm really just trying to sit with everything and embrace where I am, and it really feels different this time. And I mean, you know, the last time I was going through all of this, there's no way I would have come on and done a podcast and talked about vomit and all of these things. So
you're very brave. Yeah, you're very brave. And people who are willing to talk about it, even people listening, are very brave. You know, if you're just listening, there are lots of people who cannot listen because we use words, you know, like vomit and other words that mean that, and they cannot listen, like, and that's a lot of people. So very, very Absolutely. Brave. And you've obviously, I mean, do you, you don't have to say what it is, but do you have a career, like some sort of job that you?
Yeah, I do. So I was in finance originally, and now I'm in people and culture. I don't know if that Okay. is a thing in America. It's kind of like talent acquisition, recruitment, HR,
okay,
safety, occupation safety. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Yeah. So you've done, you know, despite what's happened to you, you've done really well. You've got a partner, you've got a career, you've, you know, you can drive across the country, a big country that it is. Yeah, you can do all sorts of things, which is really great. I hope that you continue to be able to find people. I only know a couple of people in Australia who are working with emetophobics, but if there are any therapists listening from Australia and you're not on my list, please send me an email or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised just how many people are emetophobic. And I think there's, it feels like such a niche, unique phobia to have that just nobody talks about it. But yeah, you know, when you was looking at something on social media the other day, and it was a joke about children throwing up in primary school, and all the comments I was reading were saying, and now I have emetophobia, and now I'm emetophobic. Right. And I just thought, like, there are so many people here, you know, and you don't see people commenting on posts about, this is why I have a fear of heights or clowns or spiders. So, there's so many people out there.
There are a lot of, well, it affects a fear of vomiting affects 6% of men, 7% of women. So that's a big percentage of people. Now, there's only about 0.2% or something like that who are bad enough that they need that they seek help for it. So that would be probably a diagnosis of emetophobia. 0.2% is a lot when you think of the population of the world. Didn't we just hit 8 billion or something? I mean, and it does cross every culture. I've had people from all sorts of places, you know, and I only speak English enough to talk with anyone anyway. But but I have read and seen articles from all kinds of other Italy and Portugal and Germany and Brazil, you know, places where people are doing some research, but it's everywhere. And I think we don't talk about it. I think it's not talked about because we're embarrassed, because when we talk about it to people that don't have a fear of it and they don't understand it, they say things like, well, nobody likes it. Yeah, well, I didn't just say I didn't like it, though. I said,
I know. I don't like throwing up either. And I'm like, okay, but would you almost pass out from hyperventilating when you're actually not even throwing up? You're just getting in the car to go to the shops, you know?
A little bit
different.
Exactly. But that's why we don't talk about it. And I never talked about it with anyone because I was afraid of the embarrassment or shame or whatever. So then since I've been recovered and became a therapist, I do nothing but talk about it all the time everywhere.
Good on you.
On podcast, on social media, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So the more we can talk about it, if you're able to, the better that
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Well, Annie, you've been a wonderful guest. What a delight to have someone from Australia to speak with. I've talked online with many people from Australia, but never, I don't think, on the podcast. I apologize if I have. My memory's not great. I'm an old lady now.
I'll represent the country.
That's fine. Yeah. Thank you so much. You're going to be a great inspiration to people to really help.
Oh, I hope so. I feel like my story was all over the place, but I hope it made sense. And and thank you so much for the work that you do. Honestly, I found your page, it was just, I felt like there were people out there that understood. And it just right. having that community honestly just made me feel so seen. And it's been a big, I think it's going to be a big part of everybody's recovery. So thank you.
Well, yeah, you're welcome. Are you listening from down under? If so, I have a set of emetophobia classes, 10 classes that I'm conducting beginning in January on a Wednesday afternoon here in Vancouver at 4 o'clock, which I believe is 9 o'clock in the morning in Sydney, Australia. It is also 7 p.m. Eastern. If anyone is interested in these classes, the information is on my website at emetophobiahelp.org.